Super. Thank you very much. And I hand it over to Rachel and Rafal.
Thank you, Andreas. So the purpose of this session is to provide you with a summary of feedback received on the request for information. And the team has prepared a series of papers. Agenda papers 24A to 24F provide a summary of feedback from all respondents, including users of financial statements. And agenda paper 24G provides a summary of feedback only from users of financial statements. During this meeting, we will discuss each agenda paper in turn. We are not asking the board to make any decisions during this meeting. However, in each paper, we ask board members to comment on the feedback. The summary of other comments, including comments on projects on the board's current work plan, will be presented at the next board meeting in December. And moving to the first of the series of papers, agenda paper 24A provides an overview of the outreach undertaken during the consultation period and summarizes key messages from comment letters, responses to the online survey, and outreach meetings. During the comment period, board members and the staff undertook extensive outreach across many jurisdictions and engaged with a broad range of stakeholders. The board has received 122 comment letters and 37 responses to the online survey. Many respondents expressed support for the regular agenda consultation process, saying that it is transparent and allows for stakeholder participation in setting the board's priorities. Some respondents said the approach taken for this agenda consultation works well and recommend the board take a similar approach in the future. The overview paper includes a summary of key messages from the feedback received, and we will cover these key messages when we discuss each agenda paper in turn. And before we move on, I'd like to pause to see if you have any comments or questions on the first paper, the overview paper. Nick.
Thanks. So first of all, congratulations to the staff for bringing these papers to us so quickly. So huge effort's gone into this, obviously. The only comment I had was just on the survey where we got 37 responses that at face value may look a little disappointing, but I think it's important to look at the composition of that mix, in that it takes us, you know, further away from Europe. We have a high preponderance of comment letters from Europe. We have a response from both Asia, Africa, Latin America, which we pick up in the survey. It also clearly touches, in terms of those who responded, stakeholders who are all incremental in terms of views that we wouldn't have captured otherwise. So I think it's been a useful exercise. I think it's been very helpful that the structure has been identical to what we've asked for people from comment letters. And I would certainly be inclined to be thinking about how this can fall into our armory on a go-forward basis in terms of garnering further views.
Point.
Bruce.
I was actually going to say exactly the same thing. I think it's great to see the online surveys, and from a region where obviously it's difficult for people to make comments, I think it's really good. I just think if you consider this one plus the SMEs, I mean, it's clearly shown this is something we should be using in our arsenal. So I was going to say we should definitely be using them going forward.
Thank you. Mary?
Two things. One is I feel like I'm about to point to an elephant in the room, which is, you know, when we published this agenda consult, the IWSB was, a lot more of a remote, far off, maybe not, work in progress. And so I think it would be helpful if the staff could come back, not trying to ask you to do this today, but early in the process, and just set out how we're going to consider, and, how and when we're going to consider the interaction between our thoughts about financial reporting, financial statement priorities versus IWSB interaction, connectivity, et cetera. It may be that we put it at the end, maybe that we do it along the way. I'm not advocating for any particular outcome, but I think we should just be messaging to people about how we're planning to do it. That's one thing. So I think bringing back here's how we suggest we deal with it, in terms of this project, is something that I'd say get early on. And then the second thing, and I'm raising it now because it comes up in a couple of different places, there's a number of places where we have worked hard to try and emphasize to people what we expect to be the relatively limited capacity to add new projects. And, you know, we've talked about how if you want more of something, tell us what you'd like less of, and, you know, reminding people about the number of PIRs, et cetera. And I think a lot of people came back with very, very good and thoughtful suggestions about what we could do to increase capacity. But I think we were using a shorthand that maybe mis-signaled on that, because certainly we've heard over the last 18 months when we had a large group of consultations that our stakeholders were over capacity. And so adding more capacity, you know, more ISB capacity would not actually create the ability to do any more projects, because our we couldn't get good input from our stakeholders. So I think that maybe the assessment is a little different if we have a couple of very specialized topics that only affect a narrow segment of our stakeholder community. But even then, it's good to try and get people from across all of our stakeholders to think about the specialist guidance in the sense of, does it fit well, or, you know, do the boundaries work? So I think that when we are talking about capacity and the constraints on capacity, which I think are very real, we should be saying it isn't just a, oh, woe is me, it's our problem, but rather it's a systemic issue, and our stakeholders have the same capacity. And in some ways, our stakeholders could have more of the capacity problems, because one of the other messages I've picked up is that, at least in the early days, a lot of the increase in sustainability reporting demands is falling on the people who handle financial reporting, not wholly and solely, but it's at least in part, and that will reduce their, you know, capacity from today's benchmark for responding to and providing time to our consultation. So I think that's the other kind of environmental consideration that we have to have when we talk about capacity. So those are just two overall observations.
Thank you. As you said, it's an overview, and we will probably come by all the individual points in the respective papers. So shall we then move on to 24B?
Yes. So agenda paper 24B summarizes feedback from comment letters, responses to the survey, and outreach meetings on the first part of the consultation, the strategic direction and balance of the board's activities. Most respondents commented on this aspect of the consultation and supported the board's strategic direction. Many of them said the current allocation of resources to the board's six main activities is about right and suggested only minor modifications. Many said the board should leave unchanged its current level of focus on the IFRS for SME standard and stakeholder engagement. There was general support for the increased level of focus on digital financial reporting and the understandability and accessibility of the standards. In relation to new IFRS standards and major amendments to IFRS standards, many suggested the board should consider decreasing its level of focus on this activity. However, many others said the board should not change its current level of focus on this activity. The feedback on the level of focus on the maintenance and consistent application of the standards was also mixed. Many said the board should increase its current level of focus, whereas many others said the board should leave it unchanged. Many respondents said the board should be flexible to changes in financial reporting and should set aside capacity to respond to emerging issues in a timely manner. Many respondents emphasized the increasing importance of sustainability and commented on a potential interaction between the board and the International Sustainability Standards Board. Many of these respondents said the board should set aside capacity to support that interaction and connectivity, but said any interaction with the ISSB should not affect the board's capacity to deliver timely improvements to financial reporting. Some respondents said partnering with stakeholders from the broad IFRS community could alleviate some of the board's capacity constraints. And with that overview, I will turn it over to the board.
Thank you. Any comments? Bruce?
Thanks. So there's a couple of themes that I picked up out of this that I thought would be interesting to hear about. The first one was, and I mean, Mary started touching on it, and I think she's right, in terms of throughout these papers we keep hearing about interaction, we need capacity, we need to do everything in relation to the sustainability board. And I guess, I mean, in my mind, I'd be curious to know, how do we gauge that? I mean, you know, it's difficult to say we should be allocating resources to doing that, but I mean, this board hasn't even been We don't even have people on it and established. We don't have staff. We don't have all that. So, I mean, I think it's a difficult thing for us to respond to when we start looking at doing some sort of feedback and saying, yes, we're going to allocate 10% of our time or 5% of our time. I think that one becomes a bit difficult. The second theme that came out quite strongly to me was a lot around digital. So we're seeing a lot of people saying we need to do more about the digital work in that space. I really like the idea that there was a user group, I think it was in the US, who said that they would be prepared to meet with us once we knew what we were doing and do that. And I think those are kind of things I found very promising to rather let's find out exactly what people are needing. Because I think the digital has become one of these great buzzwords in a way of saying, yes, we must do digital reporting. But I think unless we can see true value for people in terms of pursuing that, it'll be one of those wonderful things to do and not really out there. And then the third one, I don't know if it was more of a question or comment or something you want to take away, but throughout these papers, there's also continually mention to education, empowering people. And, you know, now, my understanding, and obviously I'm kind of a bit newer on the board than some was, I mean, this is something we used to do a lot as the foundation. Clearly, we don't do that much anymore. I mean, do we anticipate that could be another change in terms of what we do? Because it was something that I remember... It comes through consistently in the papers around us helping jurisdictions adopting a lot more education, a lot more this. And, you know, if we feel that's something we're going to do, is that something that the foundation's going to look at or is something the board needs to look at? And I guess maybe it's just trying to balance up where we would sit in terms of that whole initiative. Thanks.
Thank you. Before I hand over to Bertrand and Anne, let me perhaps just throw out a few comments on working with the ISSB. I think you're right that at this stage, obviously, the body is not established. And from all we've heard so far, the prime focus of the ISSB, at least in the next year, will probably be concentrated around finalizing the work on the climate prototype standard and the presentation standard, and probably getting on its way to an agenda consultation. And probably that will keep them busy for the majority of that time. But we are setting out a strategy for 5 years. So it may well be that while today is not much for the entire board and for the entirety of our staff to think about how we collaborate, that will certainly increase over time. So it may be 23, 24, something like that. Certainly, if we think about some of our potential projects, and we will come to that, like management commentary has been mentioned, intangibles has been mentioned, so there are overlap areas. The other bit that I would just throw into the ring is, if you see that graph, and you had it in the overview paper as well in paragraph 12, the top of page 3, it seems that there's a tendency, an appetite for just decreasing one category, but either leaving unchanged or increase all the others. So then the question, of course, is, okay, is the headline message, don't do any more new IFRS standards because that means change and just concentrate on the rest. That's one consideration. But then I think there are two probably missing cells in here, and you've alluded to that. One is working together with the ISSB, and the other one is what do we do with our ongoing work program, which will probably equally keep us busy well into, if not even beyond next year, right? So I think we have to be mindful of that. But I pause here. Bertrand and Mary, please.
I think Anne was first.
Okay, then Anne, always the gentleman.
Thank you, Bertrand. A few comments. It's interesting that the understandability and accessibility and digital are the ones calling for increased activity. And for us, they're the least of defined of our topics, the least defined in terms of what our work is in those areas. So I think there's a lot of work for us to work out what it is we could do, what we want to do, what people think we're going to do. So quite a bit happening there. There is some interest in consistent application, maintenance and consistent application, and that's consistent with some of the feedback we've been getting over the last couple of years with the big standards and thinking about the PIRs. But similarly to my first comment, I don't think it's really clear what more we should be doing. And Bruce has alluded to education. People, you know, is there now a push for more education? Is that part of that? So again, that's a topic I think that we need to look into and to tease out how we would be spending our time. My second comment was also around our current work plan, and I did notice the number of times that, there's a comment that we should reconsider what's within the current work plan. And I know you're going to bring us paper on that next month. And I think we have to proceed with caution there. And it's not as easy as it might seem to external people to just reevaluate the current work plan. Things that might not be attractive to people might still be something that is essential as we see it in our portfolio of standards. So one example might be DRM. You know, we need a DRM project. It's not as if we can say, oh, it's got too complex or it's got harder or with the kind of criteria that people gave us to evaluate the current work plan. But I won't say more on that because I know you're going to come back on that. So the final point I'd like to make, what I would like to see is I would like you to give us a paper or whatever that actually draws together the feedback we've got that goes, that actually looks at comments that affect how we do our work. So this is all about topics and things. But interspersed in all the papers, there's material about how the board and staff work. And so I'd actually like to see that all pulled together. So you've done it. These papers are great, as Nick says. I totally agree with Nick. What you've done, fantastic effort bringing them all to us and all the work you've had to do on those letters. But I'd like a different cut. I'd like a different analysis that tells us what feedback we've had about how we do our work and how we might consider doing our work differently in terms of efficiency and effectiveness. So what I mean, people talk about working with others, working differently with the national standard setters or working differently with the SMEG. You know, what is it that we could consider in that area? Another set of comments around stakeholder engagement. Some people are very happy with the level, but about 50% actually want us to do it differently. Maybe some more, maybe some less. But what are they saying about stakeholder engagement? Are there ideas in there that we could pick up on? A third area was where people talked about feedback and testing our product before use. So are there ideas there that we need to talk about and think about in terms of how the board works? And finally was in the digital area. So people said digital, we mean digital, we don't mean taxonomy, and, you know, can you improve the way you work? Now, we've got a massive project on digital that we've been engaged in over a couple of years, but I'm not sure how that interacts with this feedback. Do they know about that? Are they experiencing the outside view of all the outcomes of all that work? But does that give you a flavour of what I mean? I think I'd like to know more about what the stakeholders say, things we could consider to how we could do our work differently with a view to being more efficient or effective. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
Good one. First being, I would like to thank the staff for having provided us with a feedback so quickly. So thank you for that. I'm still new here, so maybe my comments will also be fueled by my prior experience as a preparer. First, three comments, or it's more reactions to what stakeholders have told us in the feedback. First comment would be on the use of local stakeholders to alleviate the board's resources constraints. Yes, I appreciate why some say that, and eventually many said that. At the same time, there needs to be a bit of a caution there, because we are doing international GAAP, and the risk would be to introduce local interpretations of those international GAAP. So if we were to do so, we would need to make sure that the broader international aspects would be taken into consideration. The second comment on the legal status of TRG's decisions or educational materials, I'm not very keen on those, because each time there has always been a huge debate in Europe and notably in France on what exactly are the status of those. We know pretty well what a standard is, an interpretation is, an agenda decision is. We perfectly know the status of those. What are the status of those educational materials? So I do appreciate that this may not apply to IFRS for SMEs. I know Bruce and Tadio commented to me on a previous comment I made last month on this, but probably for IFRS standards, it's still a valid concern. And on digital financial reporting, I think respondents mainly focused on outputs. And I think as a standard setter, we should also focus on inputs in the first place. The consolidation reporting and the external financial reporting is just the very last bit of an overall process, and that needs to be fit in by inputs made locally in local operations. And so the question is it feasible for those local operations to provide with what we would be asking them in a standard? I think we need to take that into consideration. The difficulty for a local unit where the accountant is sometimes alone to provide with information that derives from very complex standards. Above all, when the standards, and it's perfectly valid that they are made so, but relate on individual contracts that needs to be analyzed. Those would be three nuances I would like to make on feedback we received from some stakeholders. Last thing for me, it came several times in the paper. I counted at least four times. Paragraph 44B, 45D, 66B, 72B, that there needs to be taken a better consideration of preparers' concerns and feedback. Of course, I'm very keen to hearing those feedbacks. The reason why I'm saying that, I'm not saying that because we need to disregard what users say. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is just that if I'm pretty convinced that if we take into consideration the preparers' concerns and feedback, we will get a good reporting. And when I say a good reporting, I mean a good quality reporting in the primary financial statements, in the notes, and this will, of course, enhance comparability within a preparer, within a business sector, among preparers, across different business sectors, and it will ultimately benefit the users. So it's the reason why I'm making the comment. I'm pretty convinced that if we take better consideration of the preparers' concerns and feedback, we may end up also providing users with a better reporting output coming from the primary financial statements or the notes of the prepared by companies.
Thank you. Mary.
I have a micro comment and a macro comment, and I'll start with the micro. There are a couple places in these papers and in this one, paragraphs 44 to 47, that report back some kind of process or operational questions, encouragements to amend the due process handbook or something like that. As a sweeping statement, reading what you've captured in the papers, none make me uncomfortable with what we've done. But I think it might be helpful to think about just pulling them together and putting them in one place and see if we need to actually respond or assess them in any way. My first reaction is no, but I don't want people to feel that we, didn't consider those if they're concerns about process. The second and the macro statement is, let's be really careful not to lose sight of the big picture on this one. The big picture was, people said first, the way you set out the agenda consultation was really helpful. And, for the first time, we included some indications of the portion of our time that we spent in different activities. And we know that was not a precise accounting. And, hence the several 5% categories, et cetera. But it was indicative, and I think people found it useful. And when I say not lose sight, people said it was helpful to have that information. And on the whole, you've got the balance about right. And, given that some of those proportions are small, the key message we heard is you're doing about the right mix of things. Nobody said, take one or two of those things that are, you know, relatively small and stop doing them. Nobody said make them the highest priority. So, you know, we seem to have the proportions about right, and I don't think we can make it more precise in this. So let's not lose sight of that overall feedback of, yeah, you've got about the right mix of things going. And there's going, you know, it's not going to be every month exactly the same proportion, because things come in and out over time. But let's remember that validation. And yes, we might end up tweaking some decisions so that we're, you know, slightly more on maintenance in consistent application or slightly less. But I think we've had very, very positive response.
Thank you, Andreas. Two quick points. First, thank you very much for the papers. In relation to some comments that some people want to see, it's the maintenance and a consistent application of IFRS. Some people want to see more agenda decision, and some would like to have less. And then I think that the point is that those that usually want to see more, just because they want consistent application of IFRS and believe that the agenda decision has a more clear authoritative guidance and etc., while those that believe that the more we issue agenda decisions, we lose a bit of the principal approach. And I can perfectly understand both sides. I just think that we have to find the right balance, and so far I believe that we are okay with that. I mean, that just looking at the number of agenda decisions published, it's very specific issues, because when it is not, usually we go to the board and ask for some narrow amendment if this is the case. I fully agree that we have a due process for the agenda decisions. I mean, that what we need maybe is people getting more involved during the development of these agenda decisions, consultation process, and etc. I mean, that maybe people should be more aware how it works and be more collaborative when we are discussing this one. And just remember the composition of the interpretation committee when we have representatives from different regions, different backgrounds. I think that in this point we are okay, my view. And I have just one comment on paragraph 53. It's saying about the IFRS for SME standards that some accounting firm, few accounting firms, suggested it's always dangerous, all these few some. But accounting firms suggested improvements to the way that IFRS for SME standards is maintained. And then they refer to maybe getting more or using more the work of the SME, for example. I'm just trying to understand whether what they are saying here is that the timing of the adjustment of the IFRS for SME standard would also change, or actually would get help, more help from these MIGs and other consultative bodies, but still within the comprehensive review approach, not actually having more often update of the IFRS for SMEs. Thank you.
Your comment ties well into Anne's, into don't only tell us what you want us to do, but also elaborate on how you want us to do that. I think it goes back to the same point, the comments that you made vis-a-vis the IFRS for SMEs. So what precisely is it? What higher frequency use, more use of the SMEG? I could very well see the other side of that. If I were an SME company, I probably would say, the less often I see you, the happier I am. Right? But anyway, yeah. Nick.
Thank you. So this agenda consultation, I think, introduced a number of innovations, which we'll welcome. Mary already mentioned the indicative allocation of our resources, which I think is very helpful. Also giving an idea of our likely capacity for new projects going forward. I observed that led to some restraint in people's wish lists or shopping lists, but not complete restraint, perhaps. And that does present a paradox, because we see in terms of that category of allocation to new standards, you know, leave unchanged or decrease, but then you look at the individual financial, potential financial reporting projects that individual stakeholders ask for, it tends to go beyond the 2 to 3 large projects that we said was our capacity. So there is some tension there between those two elements of feedback, I'd say.
Maybe a sort of a bias, given that many have just come out of a very intense process of implementation on the preparer side, but also on the consultation point that Mary made. So maybe they're just fearful and say, well, don't do any more of these, right?
Until they get to the individual projects, and then they say, do these. And that's the paradox, that on one hand, the big picture, they say, don't, and then they have a list of things to do.
Don't accept.
Yeah, my ones.
Yeah. Exactly. Zach.
Thanks. Again, congratulations. This was a lot of feedback to bring in and a large process to get there. I think I'll focus my comments on two areas. One is the feedback on the new standards, which I definitely heard loud and clear that people wanted us to essentially leave unchanged or maybe slightly increase it. And in regards to that, it leaves us a very limited amount of projects we can take on. But I tend to think of our work plan as a giant jigsaw puzzle that we're constantly reconfiguring. And as we move forward, one of the things that would help me in figuring out the right direction is to not only have what I think you've done a great job of, here's the feedback on all of the projects we outlined, the additional ones that were there, but also to think of where in the universe we can find smaller projects. So thinking about, are there entrees we've outlined where the respondents have said, the big project may not be a high priority, but here's a little amuse-bouche or a top-up where you could fit it in really quickly if you've got some room, and it's maybe a much more targeted. So they may not have responded positively to the whole project, but there's one small aspect we could turn around and get done quickly. And that would be interesting to see if we can extract some of those from the feedback, because like you said, we're about to go through a paper where we've got a lot of high-priority items that are all medium and large. And what was missing was sort of the smaller projects that'll help us fill out our work plan well. And then the second, not surprising for me, is digital financial reporting. So I was really pleased to hear the feedback from all the stakeholder groups, essentially. But there were really two themes that came across to me in looking at the feedback of what we could and should do with our newfound time if we decide to increase our engagement there. And one was partnering. There was a real call for partnering with external groups to think about how we can promote what already exists within financial reporting. We've got this great twin opportunity where we've got a second wave of IFRS filings coming across where we can sort of show the world what this means and what a difference it can make in their lives. And then the second is with the ISSB. We clearly heard the feedback that they needed to start digital and stay digital the entire way. And I think those both represent great opportunities that we can capitalize on in terms of partnering and promoting the use of digital financial reporting. But the second thing that came through was the idea of we've built a great base for digital. And what's left is maybe innovation. It's not things that we can put in place now or do differently in the immediacy. But we can build capacity, and I'll take some of the negative comments that came in and say it's an opportunity to build capacity on digital so that in 4, 5, 6 years, we can write standards that meet cost-benefit analyses, but then also are appropriate for the technology that exists at that time so that we are doing more and different things. You know, today people are asking for charts and illustrations in the accounting standards. Tomorrow they may be asking for something else. And I think what I saw was a call for a process that gets to where we need to be in 5 years versus what we should do today.
Any more comments from this panel on what you've heard?
I don't have any comments, no. Thank you. We will digest and see how we can include those comments in the future papers.
Okay.
All right.
Then move on to
Agenda paper 24C summarizes feedback from comment responses to the survey and outreach meetings on the criteria for assessing the priority of financial reporting issues that could be added to the work plan included in the request for information third agenda consultation. Most respondents provided feedback on this aspect of the agenda consultation. Almost all agreed with the criteria proposed by the board. Many said the criteria are well-balanced and adequate. Some of those respondents who did not express any concerns and alleged that the board would need to apply judgment to decide which projects to add to its work plan. Some respondents said they would like to better understand how the board weighs the criteria and applies them to individual projects. Some respondents shared various observations for each of the criteria and provided some drafting suggestions for some of the criteria. In addition, some respondents suggested the board consider additional criteria in deciding whether to add a potential project to its work plan. For example, the consideration of a cost-benefit analysis. Some respondents said some of the proposed criteria are not included in the due process handbook. They suggested the proposed criteria be included in the handbook, or the board clarify this link between the proposed criteria and the criteria included in the handbook. Question for the board is on page 10. We would like to know if the board has any comments or questions on the feedback discussed in this paper. With that, I turn it over to the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Akila. Any comments from board members? Eric.
I'll start out with one, which is I caution against getting too caught up in a lot of work refining and polishing the criteria. I think our purpose in setting out the criteria was to say we want to walk through all of the candidates we hear back in a consistent, comparable fashion. And so the criteria are there to help us do it that way, rather than considering different aspects or weighting different things. So I think what we've heard back is largely validation of the criteria. I take the drafting points, but I think I would not spend time refining them because really it's the headline version of the criteria we're going to use rather than, you know, the nuances of the specific phrasing. And I think it may help for some of the criteria that, you know, there are some that were drawn from the, I think, what are the interpretation committee criteria for, no, I guess it's when we're moving things from research to standard setting, and some of the other criteria which people were, a few had concerns about being, quote, not in the due process handbook are really, to me, operationality considerations that might have a, you know, marginal impact on cost benefit. So I wouldn't worry about memorializing them in the due process handbook or elsewhere, just saying we basically were told we were considering the right things. We're going to use these in order to have a consistent analysis, across all the candidate projects and not burn too much time and a lot of process-related activity.
Anne.
I liked that we got feedback in support of these criteria. I think it was very positive. People were positive about the criteria. They asked this question, how will the criteria be applied? I think that that's an evolving thing that we will do as we go along. Like Mary, I wouldn't change the handbook. I don't think we need to do that. There was questions about why don't we rank or prioritise the criteria. I think it's trying to turn something that involves a lot of judgment and sensitivity and discussion into as if it's a precise mathematical science, and that's not what we're dealing with. And we had the various calls for people, you know, to prioritise certain stakeholders or, think about a specific cost-benefit criteria. I don't think that we need to do that. I think that the business of the board is always about a range of stakeholders and always about cost-benefit. So I didn't see room for change there. A couple more comments. One was about interactions. Many people said, you know, if there's interactions between the projects, and many people mentioned that, think about the next paper we're going to talk about the projects. Often they group things and they will say this goes with this and that sort of thing. So here's people thinking about interactions, and I think we'll do that as well, but that's how we're applying the criteria, because there's some commonality between projects, but that doesn't mean because they've got some commonality we would work on the whole lot of them, or that. No, I just don't think that it's going. We will think about it, and I think it's part of how we operationalise criteria. And finally, the call to make international comparability criteria. I agree with thinking about international comparability and the extent to which our projects reflect work that other national standard setters are doing. But I wouldn't want to take that in as a criteria. I wouldn't want to do that without reciprocity from the other side. And this is a path that the board has been down in the past, and there are no plans at the moment to go down there, nor do I think there should be. So yes, by all means, it's good to know what other people are working on, but we're trying to respond to the stakeholder group that is our constituency. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Bruce?
Thanks very much. So there were two comments I wanted to make. The first one, the easy one, quickly just commenting on what Anne said. I mean, I think there's a number of comments around US gap and convergence, et cetera, and I just think we should be pretty kind of straightforward in our feedback statement around whether this is or is not a criteria that we're going to follow. My assumption is it's not, but I think rather just make the statement now so we don't just keep getting the same comments. The other one was quite interesting. It was around the comments on criteria one, and I guess it was quite an interesting one, and maybe this is reflective of the fact that we did issue this before we started maybe thinking about some of these issues in the area of sustainability. And I think it's just that we'd kind of focus very heavily in terms of investors being the primary users, et cetera, as we've defined. But you can see people are starting to bring in some of those other concepts around, well, have we considered wider society? Have we sought the importance of other stakeholders? And I just think that this is something we may need to give consideration to. In fact, that if, you know, given we're moving into a much more kind of ESG world as opposed to everything just being around kind of what we've seen as traditional use of the financial statements, this is one of those areas where I think that given people have said, well, if that's going to be one of the criteria we're going to use, how's that going to tie in with potentially the work that's being done by the alternative board once, well, the system board once that's been set up? And I just think we need to spend some time thinking about that, because I think that when we look at who the users are going to be, it could be interesting if the other board issuing standards where we're trying to work together have got a completely different set of users that they're looking at, and how that potentially is going to tie into each other.
Bertrand?
So no surprise. We'd have a very similar comment to Bruce in the first place. I think in this regard, the paragraph 12 A, B, and C of the paper were pretty clear. That we received some feedback to have a focus not just user-centric, but more global. And probably, notably, above all, with the creation of the ISSB. And as I said in relation to the previous paper, I think we need to take into consideration the relevance for preparers also. If it makes sense for preparers, it will make sense for users also. And two illustrations on that. The first, on paragraph 13, there is a comment saying or commenting on the proliferation of non-GAAP measures. That is a perfect illustration we need to capture during our PIRs, because effectively, if there is a proliferation of non-GAAP measures, above all following the implementation of a new standard, it's because the gap measure is not providing the information preparers and sometimes users need. So it's probably something to consider. That's a very, very concrete illustration of why I'm saying we need to take into consideration the relevance for preparers also. And the second, of course, but I think it's more general to all stakeholders, including preparers, but not only, will be the workload attached to
the consultations that we will send out as a board, but that the ISSB will also send as a board in the coming months, years. And it was reflected in paragraph 18A of the paper quite well.
Thank you. Jin Zhao?
Yes, I just want to echo what Mary said, that from my perspective, I think we do not need to spend too much time to refine those criteria. Because based on the feedback we receive, I think generally the stakeholder quite support our criteria, so I don't think we need to spend too much time on it. Secondly, because some stakeholders said that some of the proposed criteria are not included in handbook, a due process handbook. But actually, if you look at the handbook, actually there's no criteria for what kind of project should be added to our future 5 years work plan. So I think that assumption does not exist. So I don't think it's useful to us, you know, to ask the trustee to add those criteria in the due process handbook. Particularly from my perspective, I think whether we should add additional those important projects into our agenda, it really depends on the demand from users, also preparers as well. And also the circumstances actually are changing very fast. So if we add some criteria in the handbook, maybe next 5 years situation changes. Whether we need to change the criteria in the handbook first and then to consult what kind of agenda should be added to in our work plan. So I think this kind of flexibility also we should think about. So I also, as Anne said, that I also disagree to add, to make any changes or add any criteria in our due process handbook. Thank you.
Nick?
Thank you. First of all, we need to be very clear on the objective of the new board, and that is focused on capital markets information. It's entirely focused on the information needs of users. There's nothing above and beyond that. The definition of materiality that's proposed is aligned with the definition that we have in the existing conceptual framework. And so I think we're dealing with an identical set of users. I don't think there's any room. I mean, there may be other users of that information beyond capital markets, but it's focused on capital markets needs, as is our own board. So I think that there is alignment there. The second thing to say from my perspective is that we have to work very hard to garner the views of users. We know that for a whole variety of reasons, they are the least responsive of our key stakeholder groups to our consultations. They are the least interested because they have thousands of other things to worry about compared to, say, if you're sat in an audit organisation where what you do is accounting. And so we do have to, and we continue to work hard, and I think we've done very well there for the last few years in doing that. But I think we have to be careful in that respect in terms of how we position that and how we encourage those views. And like others, I think we always think about costs and benefits, but I'm very... The message, if it makes sense for users, for preparers, it makes sense for users. I'm very nervous of that message, because it kind of sounds like it's dismissive, or could be perceived as being dismissive of the user view. I don't think it's intended to, but it could sound that way. But we just need to be careful. You know, this is fragile in terms of garnering those views, of hearing those views. From time to time, there's still a frustrated stakeholder group in terms of what we have delivered to them so far. I think we have some things which they welcome, which are an existing work plan. But ultimately, they are the customer of the process, and they are, if they're not using the output, we can all pack up and go home. So I think, just remain full cognizant of that.
Thanks, Nick.
Just to answer to Nick, I'm not saying that we shouldn't focus or we should not consider the user's needs. What I'm saying is that it doesn't mean that we should disregard the preparers' concerns and feedback. And we need to be very conscious of prepares concerns and feedbacks, because if users are in accordance with what you're saying, Nick, our customers, for sure the ones preparing the information are the preparers. And so my comments to say if it's useful for preparers, it would be useful for users. What I'm just saying is if we can reach if we can be ambitious enough to get the adherence of preparers to the core principles of IFRSs and of preparing financial statements in pure compliance with IFRSs, then I think we will have also met the objective of serving the user's needs. I'm pretty convinced of that. Each time there will be a lack of adherence from the management of a company to a set of accounts, it will be figures prepared by the accountants. And I'm sorry, but I'm not sure this serves very well the interest of the users using the set of accounts prepared. Just that I'm saying. We need the adherence of the management of the company.
Thank you.
I agree with what Mary mentioned about not working too much on polishing and refining the criteria. And in terms of the cost and benefit, I think that considering the different criteria already we have in hand, comprehensively and together, that requires the board to balance the cost and the benefit of the stakeholders in the financial market. So I don't think it's not necessary for us to highlight that point as a criteria. And also about international comparability, I agree with what already mentioned. I just wondering, it might be efficient to raise the awareness about how we consult ESAF members as well as national standard setters and how we interact with national standard setter outside the foundation.
A few quick comments building on a few points raised by others. Firstly, on the criteria, I agree with what others have said. I think the criteria are obviously really important in terms of making sure we've got a consistent way of trying to navigate the way forward with the feedback that we've got. And it's really important that we have got the views of our stakeholders about, you know, did we miss something obvious? Do we seem to generally be looking at the right thing? But I agree with Anne that ultimately this is a hugely judgmental exercise. So I think we need to get the balance right between having being very clear about how we're thinking about making these judgments, giving people an opportunity to comment on that, but then not trying to sort of straitjacket ourselves into a more formal process. I think we're about right where we are. So I'd agree with those things. Just wanted to comment a little bit on this debate about who we should be thinking about, and firstly, I think I agree with Nick that, you know, the trustees have been very careful to try to be clear that the IWSB's mandate is to focus on the information needs of investors, and the prototype certainly used the current definition of materiality as the proposed basis of materiality for the assessments. And until the IWSB is, you know, exists to defend itself, I think we need to just be very precise with our language. In terms of the sort of preparer versus investor view of things, trying to sort of try and find some friendly, nice middle ground here for everybody, if I can. Let's hope I don't make it worse. The conceptual framework, I think, is pretty clear that our focus is on trying to meet the information needs of primary users, being investors for investment decisions, and really focusing on those who can't demand the information sort of one-on-one bilaterally. And so that's our focus, and I think that's correct. But I think I would totally agree with Bertrand that the preparer view is really important in here. Clearly, we need to understand the cost perspective for the cost-benefit assessments. And I think where we totally can find sweet spots from time to time, and of course I'll use IFRS 9 as an example, if we can build on the way that
you know, companies think about credit risk management and build a system that is aligned with how management thinks about things to prepare information for IFRS financial statements. That's where we have the greatest strength, because then we've got really good alignment between what investors hear, what's really going on in the company, and everybody's got more confidence and people are, you know, everybody's sort of happy. And that's our sort of sweet spot. I think what we want to try to avoid to do, and I don't think Bertrand would disagree, I hope not, is if it is the case that at the moment preparers aren't looking at a particular piece of information, but we determine that we think that is really interesting for investors, I don't think the fact that we might need to change, you know, perspectives from a preparer company to meet that investor view means it's a non-starter. Like, we need to look harder and look more closely at it, but I don't think that's what Bertrand means. But I think it is interesting to understand how management is using information and how their systems and things work, because if we can find a relationship between the investor needs and how management's thinking about things, that's a great combination when we can get it. So that preparer view is important for acceptance and for developing those links.
That was more the later, or your first point than the second one, but...
You can now detach your Irish tie. Today.
Thank you, Andreas. It's just to say that every time that I see this kind of discussion about the primary users and then our focus on investors, I remember one project some time ago when I thought that some kind of information should be provided in the financial statements, because I was looking at the other stakeholders, not from the stakeholders, from investors' sides. And then I just realized, and I learned from that point, that actually it is likely that, and then the article on climate-related, climate risk and how it impacts the financial statements is a very good example on how the information that is more relevant to other stakeholders, but it became relevant for investors as well. I mean, that in a certain point in time, it will become relevant for the investors and for all. And I fully agree when Anne said and mentioned also Mary, in terms of the best seller sentence in our papers is that the benefits outweigh the cost. I mean, that we always make this kind of assessment. And if we believe that in a point in time there will be one winning side, it is likely that both are losing, because the market will find a way to go back to the right balance. I mean, that I really believe that is through the discussions and finding a way, exactly what we are doing for some papers, including in this board meeting, that we probably will find our way to meet all stakeholders' expectations, even if we are primarily focusing on investors. I think that is the right way to move forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Tadeo. I have my name tag put up to complement what Anne and Sue have said. And let's try not to make this an overly scientific exercise. I think from a language perspective, I could even see that using the word criterion probably wasn't the best choice. Consideration might have been an easier one, because criteria thinks or looks like you have to adhere to those, and you actually have to prove that you have adhered to the criterion, right? Whereas you say you consider these and factor these in making an overall assessment, it's a bit lighter. It says basically the same thing, yeah? You should not go and just throw the dice, but you should really give it due consideration, but it's not really showing me how you've met that, right? Because I would not want us to end up in endless debates with our stakeholders. You've made your decision, but you haven't proven that you had actually met criterion 2, 4, and 7, right? This is the wrong way to really get bogged down. So in a nutshell, I completely agree with what has been said. I think the overall feedback seems to suggest that we got it approximately right. And let's hope that we can make a good judgment decision then when it comes to it. Okay, we are running 30 minutes ahead of time. I suggest, and I've asked the team beforehand, whether we could actually pull forward one of the papers. Now, I don't dare to pull forward 24D, because that's probably one where I expect some discussion, but 24G, the feedback summary of
uses of financial statements might be one that we could actually pull forward and then have the projects discussed holistically. That's okay? Uh-huh.
Yes. The agenda paper 24G summarizes feedback from users of financial statements. The board received that feedback from 15 user comment letters, 7 user survey responses, and 21 meetings with individual users or groups of users. Of those users who commented on the strategic direction and balance of the board's activities, many suggested the board either increase its focus on or maintain the higher end of the current level of focus on maintenance and consistent application of the standards, digital financial reporting and understandability and accessibility of the standards. Recognizing the zero-sum game nature of resource allocation to the board's various activities, some users suggested the board decrease its current level of focus on new IFRS standards and major amendments to IFRS standards, focus less on the IFRS for SMEs standard, and seek synergies in engaging with stakeholders. Many users provided feedback on the proposed criteria. Their feedback was consistent with feedback from other respondents. And regarding users' priority projects, most users said a project on the statement of cash flows and related transactions is a high priority. Many users ranked climate-related risks, intangibles, and cryptocurrencies as high priority projects. Many users also said that potential project on operating segments is high priority. However, many respondents other than users rated potential project on operating segments as low priority. So with that, I will turn it over to the board.
Anybody wishing to? And always the ladies, right?
One of the things I thought about in this very excellent paper, when you were giving us all this feedback, was whether all votes are equal. Every time someone expresses a view, are they all equal? So you did great work in doing the most, many, some, a few. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that staff have adopted in this project and elsewhere, and it's really helpful. And we know the bands. But, you know, as we think about this, it's great, and what you've given us is great, but there's just got to be so much judgment as we come back and think about this, because, you know, I'm not sure that the views of every respondent is equal, because some respondents are so much more informed on a particular part of the problem than others. And so sometimes people will share with us, which is great, we've asked them to, but they share from a position of, well, it doesn't really affect me, so I agree. I'm happy with it. I agree. But there's someone else who's intimately involved in it has a very strong view. And that's what we don't get that sense of when people have really strong views and when people are just neutral and, oh, I agree because I'm neutral. So I don't think all votes are equal. I don't think every time there's a voice that's equal. And so then really just goes back to what we just talked about with 24C, that there's going to be judgment applied. But that takes nothing away from what you've given us. It's great you've given us all these details to work from, and then it's the job of board and staff to do all the apply the judgments and so forth using the criteria. Thank you.
Can I just respond to that, because I completely agree with you, Anne. It, whenever we're doing a comment letter analysis, it is enormously judgmental, and that the some, few, many it is a very crude tool to give you a sort of indication of the number of people who are making particular comments. But you're right, we get some comments where people have really thought through the issue, and they may be the only one person who's actually sort of put a really good analysis on it, and others just say, oh yes, we agree or disagree, whatever. So we need to get into that depth, and that's why we always say that when we're doing comment letter analysis, and particularly with this agenda consultation, it's not a popularity contest. It's not about the number of votes that a particular project or a particular issue gets. It's about the strength of the arguments and the discussion that's there.
Glad you said that, because otherwise I would have said it. Yeah. Right now it's not a beauty contest, right? Mary?
A couple things. One is, the very first is to add my thanks to others, because I think very, very useful, very well done paper. And when I sit and say, what does it tell me versus the overall feedback, one thing it flags is that there are a couple of projects, and I'm going to steal words that I think come from Zach, a characterization as a barbell, where the views were split at either ends in terms of some types of stakeholders saying high and some types saying low. And so I think a paper like this is useful for fleshing out what those are. And the two that I flagged were the statement of cash flows and the segments, and I think you know, Rafael, you mentioned those in your TF. So I think that doing, taking the line of not every comment is, you know, one vote, what we were just saying, it's particularly important to me that was almost universal across, you know, those two across user groups. It doesn't mean automatically, therefore, they must be added, but I think that kind of makes them ones that we have to analyze very, very thoroughly in terms of understanding what the challenges, the requirements are, and how it fits in with other things. Then it gives me a chance on this on a couple of the suggestions in this paper to flag a piece of data that I'd like you to include when you do the project-by-project analysis. For example, there was a suggestion, paragraph 67, that we reconsider the fair value model in IFRS 3, that, you know, that's my shorthand, and a suggestion, paragraph 82, to do more work on other comprehensive income. Those are two examples where we've each had a recent project on fair value model in IFRS 3. We relatively recently completed the PIR of IFRS 3. And if there's not fundamentally new data that, you know, that comes in, somebody might not have agreed with the overall weighting of conclusions that we had before. I guess I'd want to know when we most recently considered something and why we decided not to do it, rather than treating every item as if it were, you know, a new issue for the first time. And the other comprehensive income, when you're writing that up, I'd flag that this was one of the focal points of our conceptual framework project. And so I think the question for us would be, do we think we could make more progress than we did when we, in standard setting terms, relatively recently completed consideration of that? And then, you know, in other papers, there are examples, other examples of people raising things that have been considered in post-implementation reviews or in a recent research project. So in each case, if it's something we've looked at, let's say, in the last 5 years, I'd say, could you just remind us of when we've looked at it recently and whether people are asking us or not? You know, is it a new question, or are they asking us to reconsider a relatively recent conclusion, because that might help inform our priorities?
Tom.
Sorry. Just a small point, following on what Anne said. I noticed in not just the users, but also generally on intangibles, there was a bit of a split between people who would like to see recognition and measurement and people who want to see just disclosures. And I think that would be kind of an interesting place for even the value of the arguments, because if we decide to do that one, and or possibly a relatively early, we might decide to do one fork or the other. And I just think it's really important. And I was thinking even to the GPF, where some of the GPF members actually preferred recognition recent meeting, is just to really look at the arguments carefully, and also to consider whether people's understanding would change as we go through a process of discovery. So at the agenda consultation, I get it, I've looked at all these items, and I say, you can't possibly come up with recognition, just do disclosure. I probably haven't thought about it as carefully as if we do several months' work and put out some ideas. So I just, again, a caution about following on Anne's, it's a slightly different version, about, you know, taking the arguments and how much evidence do the people have when they made them, and could we offer better evidence, and might they change? Because I think that'll be a really interesting call for the board, whether we try and do something on recognition and measurement or simply try and do more on disclosure.
Nick.
Thanks. Segments just won't go away, will it? it comes up all the time, and it's a bit of frustration. A couple of other observations. I see a interrelationship between the potential project on cash flows and the going concern issues that are related, almost between one being practice and the other being theory. I think users in particular would welcome a project on the statement of cash flows to better understand the ability of entities to service their debts through their cash flows and remain going concerns. So that's where their interest is, probably less than what happens around what can become, or the danger of becoming boilerplate statements around whether, as an entity, I still think I'm going concern. You know, entities are very obviously naturally wary of making those types of statements. So I think the focus of the users would be to try and better understand the economics around the cash flow statements and so on. And then just Mary's point that she made on paragraph 67 and the work we've done through the post-implementation review of IFRS 3 and those intangible assets. I think this is still an issue for some. It's certainly been an issue for me. And my recollection is that where we'd left it is that we might come back to this through a project on intangibles. And that was one of the conclusions. But it's good generally if we can note where we've done recent work.
I thought the paper was very interesting to read and to get a feedback from users. Just a comment on the illustrations of the two previous comments that I made, and just to then reassure Sue on what my thinking exactly is when I say we need to take into consideration preparers. I'm perfectly in agreement with what is expressed in paragraph 67 or 69 on IFRS 3 and IFRS 5. If you think of IFRS 3, we perform as a preparer. We are a preparer. We perform a lot of work to compute the purchase price allocation, so as to then be in a position to create non-GAAP measures, so as to exclude everything we would have put in coming from the purchase price allocations. So what is interesting is not just that the performance, whatever your metric would be, has increased by 20%. The important thing is if your operating performance has increased by 20%, but organically there has been a decrease of minus 5%, I think, of course, probably the management internally and the users externally will focus on the minus 5 and not on the plus 20, which is quite obvious. So there's a need to provide also organic measures at constant currency, constant perimeter. So we need to undo what has been done for the sake of implementing IFRS 3. The same for IFRS 5. I perfectly understand the comments made by users. It's exactly my experience as a former preparer. So notably, non-current assets, when classified as held for sale, are not depreciated or amortized, which is counterintuitive. Yes, of course, it's totally counterintuitive. The preparer is still continuing to use the assets, the non-current assets that are no longer amortized. So it's of course, even if I perfectly appreciate why on a mere conceptual standpoint it has been decided so, it's very counterintuitive. So I'm totally aligned with the comments made by some users there in paragraph 67 or 69. And it echoes back to what I'm saying. It's also something I'm hearing from preparers, and it's the comments are not necessarily misaligned there. And what will serve preparers could serve also well users. I'm not saying that we need to undo everything in IFRS 3 and IFRS 5, by the way. It's not what I'm saying, of course, in making these comments. It's just the illustration that sometimes you need to use non-GAAP measures to provide the useful information for the day-to-day management internally of the company and for the users. And by the way, for instance, my recollection of applying IFRS 5 and notably paragraph 69, on the stopping of depreciating non-current asset was to provide the information as if the amortization expense had been accounted for normally in the notes to the financial statement as a non-GAAP measure, and it was also a request from the users of the company I was working for. So the comments there are totally aligned, and it's just an illustration of what I said previously,
And I think Sue summarized perfectly the concern I expressed then. And the last piece of comment on the direct method of cash flow statements. I mean, everybody would agree that it's probably the best method to go with. But of course, if nobody does it, there's a reason. And notably, the reason is just the cost. You need to align then three departments, the central treasury department, the central accounting department, and of course, the departments of each operating unit. And it becomes to be increasingly complex to organize and potentially costly. And so the indirect method of cash flow statements is a nice proxy that is far less costly and still provides useful information, I would guess, both for the companies internally and for the users externally, even though I do appreciate Nick's comments and I'm not misaligned with his comments on the needs or potential expressed by users on a project on statement of cash flows.
I think reading the paper, what becomes very clear, if it wasn't already, is that there's a variety of investor views. Can't get them to agree on anything, but we actually did, and I think that was the takeaway for me. There were some things where there was strong agreement, particularly the cash flow statement, and for a project within that. So I think, yes, there's a strong group of investors that would love to see a direct cash flow statement. But they said, well, if we can't get there, here are the needs we have that can be met in other ways. Mm-hmm. And so we can consider those as well. I think one of the questions I had in looking at this feedback, and it'll carry through to the other papers, and it in particular went to a group of items, which is intangibles and how it became an umbrella for other projects that were also separately. So in this case, something like pollutant pricing or crypto. So I don't know if you can give the feedback now or if it's something we can talk about as we move forward, but when you characterize the sort of feedback from many, it felt to me like sometimes people were responding of, we should do a big intangible project that would include crypto and would include pollutant pricing because those are currently intangible assets. And sometimes it felt like they wanted us to do one thing. And to Tom's comment, when we start to go down the decision tree of how we do different things, it'd be good to know those dependencies. So if, for example, we decided to do intangibles, but we only wanted to do disclosure, that really doesn't help us on pollutant pricing. It may help us on cryptocurrencies. And so getting a little bit more of a feel for where those dependencies are and which projects might have to fall out, depending on which way we go, it'd be really hard for me to set an agenda without knowing that almost.
You're done? Nick, do you have anything in addition?
Just to clarify that I don't think all users do want a direct cash flow statement. Which is really following up from Bertrand's comment. I think there are split views amongst the user community on that.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. It's that my check, yeah.
I'll do that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. One point that, and I agree with what Anne said, the classification. And I have already elected my triple S, some. That are some topics that actually some think that is high, some medium, some low. That's the easiest one to deal with. But I think that one point that's interesting, especially when I look at paragraph 25, the comment on IFRS for SMEs standard, it just draw my attention how important it is to make a qualitative assessment of this OS or whatever is the final rate for the project, because sometimes it might not be interesting for some of our stakeholders, might be quite important for others. And I think that definitely the reason that we have the criteria is actually to help us to consider it all phases of the topic. And another issue that I want to point out here is in relation to operating segments. I really want to you, if you can just check, is not sure for me at least whether it is something I have here that something that it didn't go right since we issued IFRS 8, or it's just a matter of reopening a discussion. I mean, that's something that Mary said. Is there any fundamental change since then to justify reopening that subject? That it really draw attention, because it's basically here that operating segment appears as a high. That there are some, but basically it's here that this pointed out as a high priority. That are my comments. Thank you.
Theo and.
Can I just respond to Theo? I think there's been people that have never been happy with IFRS 8, the converged standard that came. And then when we did the post-implementation review, there were very little change that actually came out of it. So I think that for some people, particularly in the user community, it's bubbled on. These issues have bubbled on. And once again, they're bringing them to us and saying, not happy with that standard.
That's a reminder. Okay, I think that concludes our first slot. That's okay. Thank you very much, team. I suggest that we take a break, and could we reconvene at 22?